Welcome back. We will start with picture three, but just kind of a quick pump priming. Remember, the big idea is that the dove is both Aphrodite and the Holy Spirit. That kind of symbolizes and the Holy Spirit. Remind me.
You were going to go over the fact that this is going one way.
Right. Just to repeat and maybe emphasize, remember this is the classical heterosexual transference. There are many other varieties. There are smaller versions. There are negative transferences. That's more the nuts and bolts of how you do therapy. What Jung is just showing us is the paradigm of this numinous experience that can sometimes happen, and it's both a wonderful opportunity and it's full of pitfalls. Okay, picture three. We have the same two crown figures standing on the sun and moon, and now their clothing is removed. The nature of their connection is also different. So now we're going to watch the thing evolve. No longer are they holding left hands, which signifies an unconscious connection. Either their right hands are connected through the flower, and so are their left hands. Instead, they are connected by the two flowers they mutually hold. The dove is still above with its additional flower crossing the other flowers. The star is missing and is replaced by its earthly embodiment, the six-fold star flower, which connects the two figures. So there's no longer a star up here. This has taken the place of the star. So that transcendental dimension has become what is being lived out affectively between the two people. I think the flowers are primarily a reference to the erotic aspect of the motivating energy. In dreams, flowers generally point to two major ideas. When a single flower is emphasized, it's very often a mandala image, since flowers are natural mandalas. The other idea is that flowers represent nature's capacity to attract. They are manifestations of beauty, allure. So psychologically considered, flowers would represent a beautiful bait that the unconscious holds out to the ego in order to lure it into the process of individuation. That would be the desire pulling us into this journey. Now, as I mentioned, the left hands are no longer touching and the star has disappeared. As I understand, the six-pointed star from the first two pictures has translated itself from the upper region into the space between the two figures, so that the emotions now carry the significance of the self. We now have a six-pointed figure held between the two figures and the dove. We had the beginnings of that six-pointed figure in picture two, but it wasn't completely joined because of the left-handed connection. The two figures weren't completely committed to the six-fold connection, but now they are. Does that make sense to everybody? Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah, right. But I think here the big development is that the left hand meant that there were things that were going on that weren't exactly talked about. The incestuous dimension also led to probably shame and avoidance and denial. And that has to be cleared up. In a way, a little bit, I hope I'm not confusing if I say this, but the boundaries are getting clear. Before, when it was left, there were all sorts of tricks. Maybe if we meet, I know he goes to this restaurant, maybe I'll run into him, maybe we'll have dinner, maybe we'll have sex, and so on. All sorts of tricks are part of that left-handed stuff. That suggests to me that the star evidence of a transpersonal or cosmic dimension has now been constellated in the relationship between Sol and Luna. Maybe I should mention that for a second. You know, it's Jung's idea, of course, that the self is not created out of experience. It is prior to experience. That's the star. And when the star becomes the flower, that means that the emotions between the two people are symbolic of the nature of that individual's selfhood that is coming into consciousness. That makes sense? So in the case I told you about, our feelings were the matrix of the owl, the mother figure, the cat, and the hacker. The nature of those feelings was the vehicle of that other dimension, the star dimension, coming to her. This would correspond to the incarnation of the deity, you see. The descent of the transpersonal content into the vessel of the relationship between these two figures. Make sense to everybody? The nature of the emotions is a reflection of what is coming to consciousness. So that the personal emotions have a transpersonal meaning. They have a meaning for communicating to the individual who they are. And who they are is something they have been given to be. So that the impersonal and the personal join. It's another way of saying the dove is both Aphrodite and the Holy Spirit. Uh-oh, pushed the wrong button. I don't know if this next thing will make sense or not. Or you could say that the Imago Dei has fallen into the human realm. Does that make sense to everybody? Why that's so important? Again, I think it helps you to know the background of Jung's writing. Was that he was speaking largely to a European world that said God was dead. And his point is, yes, the God in heaven is dead. But that God in heaven is dead because he has fallen into matter. The way that the pattern of our life, which would be how Jung, one of the ways Jung understands God, the way that is communicated to us is no longer something we worship out there, but it's actually creating the shape of our emotional experience when two people have strong feelings for each other. So that the God has removed itself from the heavens and is now a factor we can discern in what creates our emotional experience. Yeah?
Is this kind of like taking some of the energy of the big F self into the little F self, the personal self?
Yeah, that would certainly be how the Hindus would describe it.
Yeah.
I think Yeah, that's complicated. The Jung would feel that that big self was a, namely the image of God, was a projection in the first place. And so all that we're doing is we're going through a period in which what we once thought was outside us and big is actually to be observed in the vicissitudes of emotional life as they come to us to move us forward in our growth. That's where we can experience what we used to call God now. But what we used to call God no longer is entering into effective existence in the way we live.
Gary, would this not, in a culture or a society that's embedded in Christianity, would this not create a huge sense of guilt? Internal guilt, not guilt, but unconscious guilt.
I think so, but keep going and tell me what you mean.
It would just seem to me when you were saying that you know, from a Christian standpoint, whether we're Christian or not, we're still trained in the Christian way.
Yeah.
Of the worldview, that to take the God out of the heavens,
right,
and to embody the God,
right,
in ourselves,
right,
that provokes that sense of making God the other in the Christian,
yeah,
sense of the being, and that
I think it does, yes.
Actual fear or guilt or, it's just terror.
Yes, I think you're right. I think it's first experienced as guilt, but ultimately it's experienced as responsibility. Because what we used to expect from God, mm-hmm, is now a characteristic of our own experience.
Yeah.
And if you can take responsibility for your own experience, like this woman, if she could, as she took responsibility for those various images that came to her through that emotional intensity, then guilt is replaced by responsibility. Another way to put it, I think, is Jung is turning the relationship to God from child to parent into adult to adult. And just like adulthood means carrying guilt, so does this theological shift.
Mm-hmm. So this can be a really cultural dynamic.
Yes.
Makes it healthy.
It's, yeah, what Jung is doing, if you step back from this for a second, he's trying to understand a certain affective phenomenon between two people. But the way he is doing it, he realized, also answers many questions which are floating around in the theological world. Because the images that appear, remember, it was a goddess who came to her. He took that very seriously. That we are having experiences in that individual emotional field that used to be ascribed to God. And that is an answer to our current dilemma of either godlessness or fundamentalism. And they both amount to an ignoring of the meaning of this experience. So, you know, there are plenty of theologians who think Jung is a crank and that he is psychologizing God. I would say he's simply making God available for our emotional experience. But they don't like, a lot of people don't like this. You're right.
God back up out.
I think so. Yeah.
And keep him there, you know, don't you dare.
It's keeping the parent-child thing going.
Yeah. So, Gary, could we say then that all of these avenues in the situation are also going to transform
quality? Each and each one, we're having a new relationship. How can I put it? In the experience that comes with each of these various roads I've talked about these past meetings, you will see that experience is symbolized by images of God. And for Jung, that is an answer to the statement that we live in a godless world. the way that image appears will also evolve away from the traditional portrait of God. Now, some of you have heard this, bear with me. Some of you haven't. In a seminar, Jung talks about this, and somebody says, oh, is this the new image of God? He says, no, it is a new image of God. His idea is that with the loss of any significant religious attitude that is capable of addressing the problems of the world, I don't include fundamentalism in that, because they aren't the problem. They're not addressing the problem. There is this chance of an individual experience of images when you know the symbolism that remind us of images of God. And Jung's feeling is now it's given that there's an absence of any collective viable religiosity. It's the individual's task now who's interested in this problem to find their own version of those images. I'm pretty sure he felt in time this sort of movement would lead to a cohesive new image of God emerging out of all the little individual experiences that might then represent a rebirth of a function religious system for the society that is not the problem but it's the cure. But where we are now is we are to look at effective religious experience. It's probably not happening in the mass market. It's probably happening only in the individual. But Jung knows that's a temporary situation, or hopes that's a temporary situation, eventually perhaps leading to a rebirth of a larger image of God which we all can share, and thus these little individual journeys all parts of creating that. It's what he called transformation of the God image.
Some things are happening on the, particularly with evangelicals, it's interesting that they're beginning to get tired of the rage and the guilt that they've been dealing with the political stuff. And I see things on a number of these very large churches that started asking, well, now wait a minute, how can we act this stuff out instead of just talking it out? And they're starting to get involved in, well, you know, a lot of the stuff with Katrina, but more and more about doing things on the ecosystem. So there's a shift there into this taking responsibility for creation. When so much of Christianity was that creation was something that was given to us and we didn't have to be responsible for it. So it's clearly something that's happening there big time, that shift to responsibility is happening, you know, very consciously there.
Okay, and the last sentence, psychological intimacy is beginning. See why I say that? Because both hands are linked through a medium that is informed by a larger reality, the bird. The transpersonal star is constellated between them. It will live itself out in some way or another, for good or for ill. For good if it's done consciously, for ill if it's not done consciously. Here we have a picture of a basin filled with water, a hexagonal basin. So the sixfold nature of the star and of the arrangement of the flowers is again duplicated on the lower level of the fountain. Did you get that? Six here and six here. So first we had a six star. Now we have a six flower and a six basin. And of the arrangement of the flowers. Here we have a picture of a basin filled with water, hexagonal basin. So the sixfold nature of the star and of the arrangement of the flowers is again duplicated on the lower level of the fountain. The naked crowned king and queen are sitting in the bath waters, and again the dove is present. The encounter has gone a step further, and the two figures are now united not only by the flowers they held, but also by the medium of the water. So a new ingredient is linking these two. They have begun a state of mutual salutio, mutual dissolving. So what the transference does, it dissolves the false attitudes of both parties. Remember the woman's dream of being consumed. That's what, in the dream, this would parallel. Salutio solution is an image of a descent into the unconscious that has the effect of dissolving the solid order structures of the ego. So now the egos are being changed by having their old attitudes taken from them. Simply, they cease to function the same way as they did before. Another important feature of intense personal relationships is well revealed by picture 4. In this kind of configuration, the innate self that is potentially available to each individual is constellated in the vessel of the relationship. That makes sense to everybody?
What?
The self is behind the activation of the emotions in the relationship. And the nature of those emotions is a key to the self that constellates them, that activates them. So by paying attention to the emotions, you find your pathway to the self. Her case, owl, cat, hacker, benevolent mother. Yeah.
Is Jung saying, though, that the guy can't be revealed unless there is a cooking?
Yes, I believe he really is.
It's really important, isn't it?
Yes.
Because like the alchemist, you said, and the looking at the metal, that the guy has released itself, we need some kind of working
Well, I believe that's what he's saying, that if you think you're having religious experience without strong emotions leading you up to it, mm-hmm. you're kidding yourself.
Because even the mystics, you know, had the strong emotions.
Right.
It wasn't with another human, it was with the relationship with God. There was always the other.
Right.
Intense emotional experience.
Right. Right. And I wouldn't say that he would anyway want to denigrate that earlier tradition, but I think he's observing if you're going to function in the world, you're not going to be able to be a mystic. And where we are approached by the greater pattern of our life is through these emotions. That's the phonic spirit. And he didn't say I was interested in the spirit. He's interested in the phonic spirit. The guidance that comes through instinctual and emotional interactions. Let's see, where did I stop? Another important figure?
Here, can I just for a minute? I'm thinking of, when I watch religious TV, there's a lot of people out there that have very, what's the word I want? You know, the preachers that really get all excited
right.
about things. But it always seems so false to me. I mean, and I think what you're just saying is that I realize it doesn't feel like real emotion. It feels like some sort of play acting in some way.
Histrionics.
Histrionics, that's it. What is going on when people are, what are they trying to force the issue?
Well, I think it's that first fountain, but with no consciousness.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And if they actually try to sit in a relationship with those emotions, it blows their head off.
Okay.
Which maybe they need.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Barbara.
When you said that, what came to my mind was the fact, can we really know? I mean, we may look at and have an interpretation of what they personally are going through, but on some level, we can't really know inside them where they are. I mean, you know, if it doesn't look connected to the world, it doesn't have the same depth. I don't get the same depth out of it. But yet inside them, I don't know what they're going through.
My personal experience is when people are being emotional, being authentic, you feel that there's a resonance.
Well, maybe it's
true. And when it doesn't resonate, then it's not authentic. Then it is histrionic.
They may be authentic in person.
Well, the thing that Michelle said, though, I think is really important, and I think I should just say it flat out, Jung is making a value judgment here.
Yeah.
And the value judgment is that authentic emotional experience, at least the kind that interests him, I might be a little less tactful and just say the kind that mean anything today, but he would probably put it very tactfully, the kind of religious experience that interests me is that that comes up from the bottom of your feet and your genitals and your heart and your emotions. I'm interested in an embodied spirituality. Now, I would hate to say other people aren't having it if they aren't having it that way, but I am with him. The other stuff just doesn't interest me. What's the difference? I think the difference is with this stuff, you get an ego that doesn't need to project the shadow. That's the difference.
The other thing with those creatures, though, is there's a huge containment of sexuality. I mean, there's so much in all of that emotion. There's an inauthenticity in that they work and they preach against a full expression of life.
Right.
And so they don't allow that energy. Even the mystics were very alive.
Right.
Their imagery, they created a beloved that their culture wouldn't allow them to engage.
Mm-hmm.
And so they found it.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I look at those mystics now and I have the same experience, but my feeling is, it's like when I sat in the Catholic Church, all of that preaching was about containing energy, not allowing it to live fully into it and see where it was leading me.
Yeah.
It's a whole different approach.
It's keeping God out rather than letting God.
We were just talking at lunch about this. Our friend and colleague Darrell Sharp just wrote a book, two books called Uncorked. Uncorked. And he, in one of them, I don't know whether it's true or not, he discusses having sex with a student. I think it's made up. It was just him being very playful. And he told me he got a nasty phone call from the Pontifical Council criticizing him for his non-family values. And I said, well, why don't you say to them what my friends say of their Catholic priest? So many altar boys, so little time. It's a huge split. And what Jung is trying to do is bring that, the body and the spirit together, so there isn't the condemnation of sex on one hand, and of course then the living it out on the other with the left hand, and then this spirituality that it separates it, but to try to bring the two together.
What do you say about the left hand being separate, the
left
hand, what do you think about those left?
Well,
in light of this left hand?
There still is a left hand contact, but it's done through a medium that is informed by the self. So that these difficult emotions are still there, but they're not transformed into behavior. And they're worked with from the point of view of what they're trying to communicate, not the tricky behavior that they lead us into. They're made conscious, and you know, that is half of the important link. But it's done through a medium.
We don't want to cut off the left hand.
Absolutely not. It's just that it's not done surreptitiously.
Gary, you get an ego that doesn't need to project itself.
Shadow.
And so from this experience, this emotional experience, and this withdrawal projection from the other, part of that is also the withdrawal of the shadow.
I think the ego that is formed is not formed on the basis of a repression. And whatever is repressed is projected. In other words, if you're working with a spirituality that is here and a sexuality that is here, of course, much of that sexuality will be bad. And so all the people who are doing what you wish you could do but say you don't want to do are bad. With this understanding of transference, you allow that sexual energy to come in, that sexual experience to come in. You don't deny it, you hold it until it transforms. And even though you haven't acted it out, you feel satisfied that its meaning has been fulfilled. And so you don't resent other people who have analogous issues with it, because your issue in that regard has been solved. Yeah, you don't judge it or resent it. And, you know, you can take people by the hand then who are suffering in that same area, not with judgment, but saying, you know, I've been down that road. There's a way out of this. You don't have to consider yourself evil. It's not wrong what you're going through. Let's walk the road that brings you into peace with yourself. Let's see, another important feature. I don't think I read that, did I? Another important feature of intense personal relationships is well revealed by picture 4. Did I read that? Where did I stop? Did I read the whole thing? Oh, I'll read the whole thing. In this kind of configuration, the innate self that is potentially available to each individual is constellated in a vessel relationship. Yes, I did do that. So emotions reflect the self. That's illustrated in this picture by the fact that the six-pointed star descends to the level of the six-pointed flower pattern and then descends all the way into the bath. This tells us that the transpersonal factor potentially available to each is being initially constellated in the relationship. It's not yet individualized. Each partner has the experience of wholeness in the relationship, and that's a very valuable event. What's that mean? Transpersonal factor, you okay with that? Constellated in the relationship, you okay with that? Sure you understand that?
Well, why don't you talk about the transpersonal factor?
Transpersonal factor would be the identity you were born with. Is behind the emotions you are feeling.
And here it would be star outside.
Star outside.
And then
it becomes flower. It becomes flower, and then it becomes vessel.
That
you are born with mm-hmm. are behind the shape of the emotions you are feeling. I know it's a new idea, but this is absolutely crucial. The affective, the emotions are also symbols for who you are. They're both facts and they're symbols at the same time. What they are symbolic of is who you are. That woman saw me as a cat, she became a cat. She saw me as an owl, she became an owl. She saw me as a giving person, she became a giving person to herself. The emotions that were there were road signs to her own personal qualities. They were both. Because in Jung's mind, this is inborn. All of these characteristics of her, from Jung's point of view, are what she was given at birth. They weren't personally acquired.
But had lost.
Through a schizophrenic mother and sexual abuse.
And this is true. I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, about images from our homes or things that we see out in nature. And these are all symbols. If you connect to them, they're all reflective.
Right. Exactly.
A certain state of where you are.
Yes. And what Jung is doing here is simply taking that very basic principle and reminding us how important that is in sexuality. So that this is a kind of paradigm of the fact that facts and symbols are really the same thing. Lesser truths hold, you know, silly example, you feel powerless, you buy a powerful car. You could say, what am I projecting on the car? Your own power. There it's not so hard to work with. It's harder to work with when you're burning for the other person. You don't stop and think, what are they symbolic of? You think, well, how am I going to get them in the sack? And Jung is trying to bring that duality of consciousness, that a thing is both real and symbolic, home to us in these situations. Now, what this means is the two people have experienced their own new qualities, the qualities of the self that they will be going into, but through the other person. So they feel whole, but not by virtue of the fact they have integrated that quality, but because they found somebody who has that quality that they're with. So that six-sided vessel is a what we might call today, what's the pop psych word? Enmeshment. It's a state of enmeshment where she, if I can go back to these dreams, in the one dream, she felt comforted when I was present. And the last dream, she felt comforted without my presence. So in the dream where she was comforted with my presence, she was experiencing her own ability to care for herself through me, and she felt complete. So we were in this vessel together. And that's a necessary stage, because that now she's beginning to experience new parts of herself, but through the personality of another person. So she and I were contained in mutual unconsciousness. Very important step.
And this is the point at which in relationships it can be really dicey, because if you break up with the person or there's a break with the other person, the sense of loss is very,
it's terrible.
Very,
yeah.
Because you don't realize, you know, I'll die without that other person because they're carrying.
It's a high, and then if it breaks, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
And his word is, each partner has the experience of wholeness. They aren't whole, but they experience wholeness because they are with somebody who represents what they need to develop. And they feel they have the quality because they're with the person who has the quality. That's star, bird, flowers, basin, all based on six. You don't have it yourself, but you have the feeling of being complete because you're with somebody who has it, and that actually spurs you on then to get it for yourself. So it's very important that you allow this phase to exist, because that person has never felt complete before. They've never felt valuable. In her case, she never felt that she was worth anything, the cat. She never felt that she could work with her own experience, the owl. She never felt that when she was in a panic attack, she could soothe herself. She never felt that she could have an approach to culture, which is what that man in the art museum was about, which is, in fact, is what she did after she finished her work. She got a master's degree in liberal arts. So all of that came through her experience of me first, and then with that sense of, oh, wow, this feels good, then you can go after it yourself. Once you know what it feels like to have that quality nearby, then you can get it for yourself.
Jung believes that these are all in born trait.
Yes.
So in some time they had been, had a valence put onto them.
Yes.
So is it, does it make a difference when that valence was put on, you know, within a therapeutic relationship, that what you're doing actually is they're seeing it through you, or she saw it mm-hmm. through you, but in also at the same time, you're helping her to remove that valence or that veil that was put on. So the veils may be different, the veils, may have...
That's a good question. I would say yes and no. In the final analysis, I believe this is Jung's response to Freud. What's it matter how you got that way? We got to unget you. And that is an independent process separate from how you got there. So in that answer, no, I don't think it's important. However, practically speaking, I think it just helps us feel we're not crazy when we can see reasons for having gotten to where we are. But if you look at yourself and you realize, you know, I've lost this and this and this, because my parents did this and this and this, you still don't have it. And so Jung's response is, well, because the important thing is not when it was lost, but how do you get it back?
And remove it so you can see again.
And you see, that's what's going on in this relationship. She is seeing what she lost in me, and then she's getting it back. What's it matter how she lost it?
Yeah, she didn't think she had it in the first place because it had been gone so long. So
right.
I guess the question was, for me, did she finally feel that integration and a remembrance almost that she had it when she was born? I mean, on some
yeah.
level, not...
Yes, I think so. I think so, yeah. Again, remember, what I'm saying is a little one-sided. I think, yeah, you do, it is helpful and it is important to go back and see. But I'm saying in the final analysis, you get stuck there. And mind you, this is not something that she said, oh, let's see, I don't have a good self-esteem. How do I get... This all just happened. That's important to remember. Yeah. Definitely. Yes, we would. Yeah. And that there is an unfolding which we were both witness to as she was drawn to me and then discovered herself. I mean, I never said, oh, you have low self-esteem. You're expensing your self-esteem on me. Now, develop your own self-esteem. Never discuss that. This just happened. What we did was stay attuned to our emotions for each other, following the rules, and then she just grew. That's Mercurius, you see, leading us from the unconscious. Yeah, it's. I think in a healthy relationship it can.
But you know, that happens at work. That happens.
Yeah. Well, I remember. Thank God, this hasn't happened very often. But a young woman I worked with who eventually went psychotic. The dream she had before she went crazy was that she and her dad were mining gold together. And they found it. And he stole it. And she went crazy. You see, that was... She was falling in love with her dad and discovering parts of herself, but rather than give her back to herself, he used it for his own self-aggrandizement. And that's a very sick situation, but relationships are tainted with more or less of that dynamic to the extent that they're unhealthy. I think in a healthy relationship, you can be this mirror for each other, and you don't take personally what happens, and you help them through it. But we're all human beings. Well, they stopped working.
Yeah, that's what was born out of that relationship.
Yeah, I think that's why he dedicated this to his wife. Mm-hmm. That's where he learned.
Suggesting what?
See, they didn't know back then.
Didn't know what?
What you could and couldn't do.
Well, then he sent his first, that first one, Sabina, whatever, to Freud,
mm-hmm.
Right?
Bill Ryan?
Yeah. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And Freud probably didn't have papers,
right? They didn't know. Yeah. They were analyzing cocaine addicts at that time.
Yeah.
You know, how did they find out? Mm-hmm. But by making mistakes. And I think this essay is the fruit of those mistakes.
Do you think he would have judged him harshly if he had been correct and wrong? He had to do it for the good of the larger, the greater.
I think he had to learn the hard way.
A personal, even though it was a personal action in the world, it wasn't. It was informed by something that was greater and bigger than the personal world. Mm-hmm. And if he hadn't have done those things, then we wouldn't be sitting here talking about it. But kind of to bring it back to him being personal, that's kind of getting caught in the personal area, I think.
Absolutely.
Rather than the larger.
I repeat, he wrote this essay because he learned by being burnt what you can and cannot do in therapy. And nobody knew at that time what the rules were.
Mm-hmm.
That was 1908, 1907.
Mm-hmm.
Psychoanalysis had only existed for about 5 years at that time. And I, when I say he wrote it to his wife, I mean that's why he wrote it. This is what I've learned. I know you've paid a price for it. So have I. This is what I've learned. I don't know if she embraced it, but
well,
she probably.
Yeah. If living your life on the personal level and on the archetypal level at the same time, which is really hard, and it's almost concretizing once again.
He did concretize.
Personalize it,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
He did. Okay.
But you know, there are people in other cultures who have, you know, just heard an NPR the other day, this guy has a wife that lives upstairs and a wife that lives downstairs, and one week he spends his life on this level, and one week.
Well,
Francois
Mitterrand.
You know, I mean, people do
had his mistress and their kids in the flat above him at the Champs Elysees.
Yeah, I mean, people do these things. They hold attention on some level.
No, I don't know if they're holding attention because.
I mean, it's asking a lot, but it's suggesting that I don't know. I'm not doing it myself.
Be careful. Be careful what you say.
You're
the one that said wrong.
No, because you're saying that's why he wrote this psychology of transcendence.
I think you know it caused his wife pain.
Yeah, but you were suggesting that he thought it was wrong.
You said it was wrong. I didn't say it was wrong.
Okay, so what are you saying? How did you say it?
He learned by bitter experience that it is not conducive to consciousness to concretize these emotions.
And where did you get that? Has he said that?
Yeah, it's kind of what this whole thing's about.
Okay. But then I'm still wondering why he had that relationship going until she died.
Well, they didn't stay intimate until she died.
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so. No. And I think he knew too, she paid a terrible price.
No,
long
before. She died in the 40s,
I don't know. I don't remember. Yeah. Maybe. Anyway. I wanted to get across the idea how being in this transference relationship leads to a feeling of wholeness, which is a step on the way to withdrawing the projection, which is the integration of the content that leads to wholeness. And that's what the six-sided vessel was about. We go to five. Here we have a totally different setup. The familiar images of the previous pictures are no longer visible. The two figures have submerged completely into the basin of the fountain and are underwater, therefore not visible at all. So they're now in that vessel that basin that we saw. But a little window has been cut through the wall of the basin so we can peek in and see what's going on under the surface. Usually this stage is not experienced consciously, as desire is generally not understood. Usually there's no window. It's lived, but it's not experienced. In the vast majority of cases where this cycle is initiated, the cycle short circuits at picture 5 and reverts to picture 1 and starts all over again. Make sense to everybody? You embrace the desire, you fulfill the desire, and you start over. By the way, there's two versions of this one. That would be the fact that it's beginning to change. But that's the one we'll work with. You see, consciousness doesn't increase when we embrace an object of desire. That doesn't bring any consciousness at all. We're just satisfied, and then we start over again. On the other hand, in the case of a correct understanding of transference, this stage will not primarily refer to concrete sexuality. Rather, it will be to what sexuality symbolizes. Psychological. Keywords, huh? Sexuality symbolizes. That the action takes place underwater indicates its unconscious nature. This is quite a danger for one-sided solar consciousness. In a parallel picture in the Rosarium indicates the danger. That is, you just get devoured. It's a picture of the sun being swallowed by the lion. The instinctual level is taking over. Yeah. In the case where, how can I put it? I would say in the average situation where a relationship just works, no consciousness is produced. It may be a happy relationship, but neither person learns about themselves through frustration. Flip it, Sandy. Just flip it. And honestly, if that is what is working for you, don't bother with this. Be happy. It's when you're in a situation where it doesn't work that you can stop and say to yourself, what am I projecting what brought me into this relationship, what lesson do I need to learn out of this relationship? And of course, it's what we do in the analytic setting, because it's a synthetic process helping people to get to a certain state. It's when the embracing becomes problematic that one starts asking the questions. Either because you can't act it out in therapy, or because you did act it out in a relationship and it was a disaster.
Gary, can this be one-sided in a relationship? I mean, in a real relationship, though, this is where, you know, where a couple may not be getting along, and one person thinks they're okay, and the other person knows that they're not, and so that leads, I mean, personally, I lived in my divorce. He never got it.
Yeah.
I thought I got it, but I don't know that I got
it. Well.
But it was different from where we had been. It was different.
Yeah, I mean, I think, again, in the best of all possible worlds, let's say you've had a good relationship for 5 years, and then, you know, you hit a wall.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the best of all possible worlds, both people will stop and say, this the desire that brought us together has now become problematic.
Mm-hmm.
What projections of ours are making this difficult? And if both people can work on that, then I think you can get somewhere. If only one does, then generally that one person will grow, the other person won't, and the grower gets bored and goes off. I don't see why anyone would stay in a relationship where they're the only one doing the work. Again, best of all possible worlds and the reality aren't always the same.
Yeah, oftentimes the other person could be stuck for their own personal reasons, once again.
Yeah.
They're just not willing, they may want the relationship, but they're not willing to do their own personal work.
Right.
Which they have to do first to work on that relationship.
Right, right,
yeah.
Right,
okay.
Definitely.
Okay.
Let's do one more picture and then we'll take a break. Picture 6. Things have become radically simplified. There's a mortuary slab with a united dead body on it, and that's all there is. There is a certain regularity to conjunctio, that's the union, being followed by mortification. That's the death. Picture 6 represents the death of the ego upon encounter with the self. When the union takes place, the opposites die in the course of giving birth to the higher totality that transcends them. And if the ego is identified with one of those parts, it will share in that death experience. Here's what Jung says about the psychology of this event. The integration of contents that were always unconscious and projected involves a lesion of the ego. Now, in the previous picture, in the bath, the individual felt whole because they were experiencing the part of them that they really needed but didn't have on the part of the other person. They were projecting that quality onto the other. Her case, the cat was projected onto me, the owl was projected onto me, the mother was projected onto me, the hacker was projected onto me for a while, and then the cultural museum guide was projected onto me. Each time then that the analysand began owning up that part of herself, she got depressed. That is the death of the ego. You are saying, oh, damn it, I am not the person I thought I was. I am now a person who has to also have this new strength. And upon that realization, it's a feeling of losing who you once were. That's experienced negatively.
I understand that who we once were is what you see in the eyes of the other in the first letter of the Bible.
No, I think it's who you're becoming that you see in the eyes of the other. You could say you are drawn to the person because they represent your potential.
What do you mean about the transpersonal qualities of it? That you are born with?
Yeah, because those potentials for Jung are inborn. They're
you
not.
You don't necessarily see that identity in the other. You see your potential for your future in the other.
Right.
Well, there's also that whatever part you weren't living out is charged with negative emotions. In other words, fear or... You know,
not always.
Well, but in other words, it was not necessarily that you felt it bad, but the reason it couldn't come into consciousness was because somehow there was, you know, at least with myself, even if they're good parts of myself, there's fear at being there or difficulty with it. And so when people fall into that, I have to experience the original emotions that were stuck on there. And that's where the depression is. And then slowly as I begin to sift those out, and say, well, no, wait a minute, is that really the judgment? We're talking about the attitude. I fall into the negative attitude that somehow pushed that stuff out in the first place.
Yeah.
And
we're saying the same thing.
Yeah, and that's real painful. That emotional side of it is very painful. And so that, I think that's, in my own experience, that's what my ego was, oh my God, what the hell is happening?
Alchemy expresses this through the symbols of death, mutilation, and poisoning. In ardent transfer of desire, one is obliged to endure to the bitter full the frustration of not getting what one thought one wanted. In that process of defeat and mortification, one then makes the transition to another level of awareness. You're supposed to care for me. Oh, damn, I have to care for myself. You're supposed to interpret my dreams. Oh, damn, I'm responsible for my dreams. You have to be a person that I admire because you like yourself. Oh, damn, I have to like myself. And that involves a period of disorientation and surprisingly often hopelessness. One person I remember, I thought, said it so well. He said, you know, when you're this is actually a birth, you see, but it's experienced as a death. And he said, when you're being born, it often feels like you're dying. And this is the dangerous part of analytic work, that you give up. You think, oh, I'll never do this. I never got what I want, and I'm not getting it again. Life is just out to get me, and so on.
Talks about where your fear is,
or
your task is.
Yeah,
Then
how do you get it?
Yeah.
And that means you got to work for it. It means giving up childishness.
It's really an awful lot about growing up and becoming an adult.
This is kind of growing up through erotic projections.
Mm-hmm. Well, you also, whatever you fall into is undeveloped. So, you, in other words, you may be 50 years old and you've been using your thinking function for 50 years, so it operates very well. When you fall into your feelings, well, your feelings haven't been operating very well for 50 years, so they're like 3 years old. So suddenly, you know, you may have them, but they don't seem up to the task of the life you're living. So, you know, that sense of diminishment.
Right. That diminishment is the death. And let's diminish and take a break.
One quick question.
Yeah.
One of the things that always strikes me is the concept of time.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking sometimes it's 2 years, 3 years, it's a long period of time. In your experience, with the development of consciousness, can you engage things so
speed things up a little bit, so maybe
oh, how I wish.
I'm thinking instead of taking 3 years, it'll take two or one.
You can't speed things up, but you can slow them down. And the way you slow them down is by asking how you can speed them up.
As soon as that question came out of my mouth, I knew I was going to get it.
Gary, that's like putting up your
own
test. You know that you're probably going to go someplace where you don't want to be, because it doesn't feel good to feel bad.